2016, killing 86 people. Thursday's attack comes less than 2 weeks since the beheading by a Chechen extremist of Samuel Paty, a teacher who showed the offensive Charlie Hebdo cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad to his pupils in a school near Paris. That was followed by a knife attack on two Muslim women near the Eiffel Tower last week. French President Emmanuel Macron is facing mounting criticism from the Muslim world for refusing to condemn the Charlie Hebdo cartoons and for cracking down on what he calls radical Islam. His stance has infuriated Muslims around the world and led to calls for a boycott of French products. Iran, Turkey, and several other Muslim-majority countries have been the scene of angry protests against the French government over the past week or so. Iranian leaders warned Mr. Macron's approach would only fuel extremism. The Turkish president, whose own cartoon has also appeared in Charlie Hebdo in recent days, has also been vocal.
Adeta bunlar Haçlı seferi yeniden başlatmak istiyorlar.
They literally want to relaunch the Crusades. Since the Crusades, the seeds of evil and hatred have started falling on these lands, and that's when peace was disrupted.
France is home to nearly 6 million Muslims. The Samuel Paty murder had already heightened tensions in the country, and the French president's defense of the Charlie Hebdo magazine in the name of freedom of speech seems to have only added fuel to the fire.
In late March, the United States federal government passed the CARES Emergency Fiscal Aid Package. Back then, almost nobody would have guessed that it would be the only direct economic stimulus to households until after November's elections, or possibly ever. Months of negotiations have proven fruitless. Congress just adjourned for next week's elections, crushing hopes for the widely expected and long-awaited, but desperately needed, second stimulus package. New polls showed that Republicans and Democrats are being blamed in almost equal measure, reflecting how the elite of both parties seemingly intervened negatively whenever a second stimulus package appeared close.
Both sides are to blame. You got Trump saying he's approved it, and then he's saying Nancy Pelosi is not accepting that stimulus package. And on her side, she's saying it's not what the American people want, and she's not going to let us down by just, you know, signing off on a package that's just not good for the American people. So I would say Congress and all, presidents, on the senators and House of Republicans and all.
The economic catastrophe wrought by the implementation and handling of the Great Lockdown in the United States has increased the poverty rate nearly 20% since May. Almost a million unemployment claims are still being filed every single week. There is no end in sight to unprecedented demand at food banks. The list goes on and on.
Yeah, they need to have one. There's a lot of people who aren't working, and unemployment doesn't really cover the cost to live. It's expensive to live in Chicago. I live in San Francisco, and it's expensive to live there. There's a lot of people who are unemployed, so I really feel that the stimulus is needed.
The expected second wave of coronavirus has arrived, and many areas of the United States are resorting to the same tactic, economically devastating lockdowns. For many, the math is simple. More lockdowns plus no governmental assistance equals more economic devastation. The second stimulus failure by the U.S. elites could fuel always high abstention and a turn to third parties in next week's elections. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Cab drivers in Barcelona shut down traffic over lack of government support days after regional authorities imposed a 10 p.m. curfew to limit the spread of the coronavirus. They say they're still waiting for the European Emergency Fund and blame the regional and central governments for not doing enough to help them with the economic fallout of the pandemic.
They have to expedite late payments. They have to put a freeze on the repayment of loans to the banks, otherwise we are dead. They have to bail us out like they did with banks, to bail out everybody, not only cab drivers, but all those who cannot meet their payments.
Taxi representatives who met with the regional transportation officials say they came out empty-handed after they were told to wait for details of the relief funds and provisions decided by Madrid. Juan Luque, one of the 10,500 licensed cab drivers in Barcelona, says he may have to give up his job as the government's moratorium on loan repayment comes to an end. and the bank prepares to seize his vehicle for payment default.
The European Relief Fund will not reach us before January or February. For now, only the state has unblocked some funds for 3 months that many are still waiting to cash. I personally got paid only 1 month out of three. I survived by dipping in my savings, and when things get tougher, I will have to take a new loan from family or from the bank.
Critics say the taxi industry has done little to adapt to the rapidly changing urban mobility, as cash-strapped riders seek cheaper, safer modes of transportation.
We can't. The authorities are the ones who set prices, working hours, bank holidays. We had to regulate our business model ourselves. Look at public transportation. It seems COVID does not go down there. They shut down restaurants and bars, and they turn their eyes away when people cram metros and buses.
With a night curfew looming, protesters called off their strike, but they vowed to return and camp out until their demands are met.
While the long-time view is that the taxi industry will eventually recover from the COVID crisis, the question is at what cost, and if policymakers and mobility providers can take advantage of an over-congested public transit to offer cost-effective solutions to riders and commuters. Kusai Kadri, Barcelona.
Foul-smelling atmosphere in France against Muslims since earlier this month when France led a national tribute to a teacher who was beheaded by a Chechen teenager after showing his class the offensive caricatures of the Prophet of Islam. Now a witch hunt against Muslim associations has been launched by the French government. This came after French Interior Minister Darmanin declared, "The Committee Against Islamophobia, CCIF in France, is a backroom for Islamists who strive against the Republic. It is an enemy of the Republic." The Interior Minister repeated that there is apparently an enemy from within that has to be fought. These declarations are increasing tensions amongst the French population. The pressure is so high that the CCIF announced in a statement that it plans to expand its activities outside the European country amid concerns for its safety in the wake of Macron's remarks.
The state cannot admit its role in the rise of racism because it's responsible for an institutional racism, a real Islamophobia. The CCIF is continuously exposing it. In 2020, more than 450 cases of Islamophobia have been registered. Every time, they point to the responsibility of the state and underline the discrimination Muslims suffer from and that the state does not tolerate.
The declaration of the French minister is not an isolated one. A wave of Islamophobia and racism is rushing over France. Masks have fallen. The mainstream media and most of the political establishment spread their hatred against Islam, against migrants, every day.
We clearly see that there is a societal and institutional racism that keeps rising today, especially Islamophobia, because now there is public condemnation of the Muslim community. They are making a confusion and amalgame about Muslims. They keep pointing the finger and stigmatizing an entire community.
The normalization of Islamophobia and racist comments is a very dangerous evolution. And cherry on the cake, Interior Minister Darmanin considers supermarkets with entire halal or kosher shelves as communitarian kitchen that might lead to separatism and to more terrorist acts. Anger continues to grow not only among French Muslims but also the Muslim world after Emmanuel Macron publicly attacked Islam in defense of the publication of derogatory cartoons of Prophet Muhammad. The second wave of the coronavirus goes hand in hand with a strong wave of Islamophobia and racism in France. For decades, French Muslims have been fully part of the society, but the actual rise of racism risks ruining this integration. Chris Den Hond, Paris.
On Wednesday, top Iranian and Italian academics and experts attended the fourth conference on cultural dialogue between Italy and Iran. Because of the COVID-19 pandemic, the event took place virtually. It was organized by the Alameh Tabatabai University in collaboration with the Sapienza University of Rome and the Cultural Institute of the Islamic Republic of Iran in Italy. The conference focused on literary and archaeological interactions between Iran and Italy.
It is widely accepted that Iran-Italy relations enjoy the longest durability in the history of Iran's relations at durability that coincides with East-West relations in the world. The history of bilateral relations between the two countries dates back to over 2,000 years, which places one country as the cultural and civilizational representative of the East, and the other one as the intellectual and civilizational representative of the West.
Bonds in general, politically, economically, between Iran and Italy are very deep. Sometimes these are not very known, in particular the cultural bonds, because of political reasons. Sometimes they are not publicized just to avoid problems with partners of one country or the other, but these are very strong despite our other allies on one side of Iran and on the other side of Italy.
During the conference, Italian and Iranian academics touched on a number of cultural issues. Some drew a parallel between the influence of outstanding literary personalities such as the Italian humanist and writer Francesco Petrarca and renowned Persian poet Hafez on their respective regions of origin, while others focused on the well-established Italian-Iranian collaboration in the fields of cultural heritage and archaeology. Italy and Iran have for a long time been engaged in an archaeological touristic project in the Kermanshah province.
Our Kermanshah project, Sapienza's Kermanshah project, focuses on coupling cultural heritage development and research with sustainable tourism. So we took into consideration the whole road connecting Kastrishiri to Kartengavar, and we are studying this road as a whole and how important it was in antiquity and in the Middle Ages.
Italy and Iran also have a long history of commercial relations with economic interests playing a large role in the relations between the two countries. Max Civili, Rome.
Iranians from all walks of life took part in a rally in front of the French embassy in Tehran to protest against the French satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo and the publication of an image of the Prophet Muhammad. They also protested French President Emmanuel Macron for his support of secular laws that allow blasphemous caricatures to be published on the pretext of freedom of speech.
Just like their counterparts in other parts of the world, the protesters called for boycotting France and its products. They said governments should also condemn hate speech and discrimination against Muslims in Europe.
We are here to condemn Macron and members of his government for supporting blasphemous caricatures to be published under the pretext of freedom of expression. Such depictions are a form of hate speech and they are sacrilegious.
We are here to call for protests and boycott of French goods in response to France's stance on the offensive caricatures. God sent the Prophet Muhammad as an ambassador of peace. Macron and his cronies know nothing about Islam. They have no right to link Islam and terrorism.
It's really ridiculous that they name it freedom of speech. They should be aware that Muslims will be stronger than before, and Shia and Sunni are brothers.
Iran has summoned a French diplomat to protest France's stance on the caricatures. The country's foreign ministry told the top diplomat that France is permitting hatred against Islam under the guise of support for freedom of expression. It's a sentiment also shared by the protesters here.
It's a joke that offensive pictures can be published in France under the guise of freedom of speech. This is an attempt to call for targeting Muslims in the West through the deliberate offending of their religious beliefs and values. This has to stop. It will only lead to further hostility toward Muslims.
What happened in France underscores that they are very far from the teachings of the Bible. The Holy Book called for respecting all religions. Apparently, the French president and his cabinet members are not listening.
Mass protests have been held across the Muslim world to condemn the publication of the blasphemous cartoons and Macron's anti-Islam remarks. Shops and supermarkets have removed French goods from their shelves in several countries, including Palestine, Qatar, Yemen, Kuwait, and Jordan. Calls for a boycott are also being echoed in places like Iran, Pakistan, Iraq, and Algeria. Ahmadinejad, Tehran.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is part of a speech delivered on September 21, 2020, by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, via video conference with participants in ceremonies throughout the country to honor the veterans of the Sacred Defense Era. The meeting was held on the occasion of 40th anniversary of the Sacred Defense.
In World War II, American and Soviet forces marched on the streets of Tehran and committed corrupt actions in front of the people's eyes. Some parts of the country, in the north and in the south, were occupied by those forces and they had direct presence. Then, the rulers of those three countries held a meeting in Iran without any permission or visa, unbeknown to the rulers of Iran. In other words, the incompetent king and the stupid and incapable entourage. Mohammad Reza Shah of Iran participated in their meeting, but they humiliated him. In the meeting between the three rulers, which the Shah entering later, two of them, Churchill and Roosevelt, did not stand up to show him respect. Only Stalin stood up. Later on, the communists quoted Stalin in their memoirs as saying that because the others ignored him, Stalin stood up in order to appeal to him. This was the country's situation. The enemy would show his presence easily.
Your light and love, all I see. Nothing more I'd ever want or need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor. Grant me faith to be stronger.
With Russia, the Caucasus was ceded, and during English mischiefs in Bushehr, southern parts, and Persian Gulf received serious blows. This was true of all wars. No victory was achieved in them. However, in the Islamic Republic era, the glorious country of Iran managed to stand up against the powerful world gathered against it. The East, the West, Europe, the US, the Soviet Union, reactionary countries, and everyone else, and it managed to achieve victory. This is the first point, which is a very important one, which is part of our national identity. When it is sometimes said, and correctly so, that the Sacred Defense Era is part of our national identity, this is because it was the manifestation of the Iranian people's lofty and outstanding identity as they succeeded in winning in the war.
Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Hi, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Half a kilo of halim, please.
Hi, sir.
Hi, kitty. Good morning.
Number one, hands up. Number two, hands on the waist.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Get ready for jogging to warm up.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
One loaf of well-baked bread, please.
Supplication on Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary. O possessor of pardon and good pleasure, from wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before Thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with Thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to Thee, addressing myself to Thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to You for the hope of Your rewards. So, bless Muhammad, the best of Thy creation, the summoner to Thy truth. Exalt me with Thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with Thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but Thee and my life with forgiveness. surely thou art the all-forgiving, the all-compassionate.
The debate.
In the latest UN report on Yemen, it has been revealed that Yemeni children have suffered record rates of acute malnutrition, putting an entire generation at risk. The war in Yemen, now entering its sixth year, continues to claim lives, especially those of children suffering acute malnutrition at unprecedented rates. Has the international reaction been enough, as funding has fallen far short of what is needed to offset the effects of the conflict? And also, what about the economic collapse that has ensued? In this edition of The Debate, we will look at why the world looks on as Saudi Arabia continues this war with the U.S. support. Okay, let's start with our correspondent first to find out the latest about the situation in Yemen. We have Abdul Al-Awashedi, who joins us from the capital, Sana'a. This report by the UN, can you please tell us more about the depth of how the Yemeni children are suffering, and then expand more as to how, under the COVID-19, Yemen in general is coping with the pandemic?
As you know, a report, our UN report says that acute malnutrition is spreading among children, and severe acute malnutrition is has increased this year and about 15%. So we have a lot of problems in Yemen because of the war, because of the Saudi coalition and their siege upon Yemenis. Yemen is approaching a dire food security crisis. 80% of the people in Yemen are suffering, and they're depending on any form of help from organizations, from UN organizations. So UN knows what is happening in Yemen. They know how the humanitarian situation is getting worse and worse each day. They didn't do anything to or for Yemenis. Instead, they have removed the name of Saudi Arabia from the blacklist of children killers.
Okay, very good. Thank you. We appreciate that. That's our correspondent, Abdul Latif Al-Awashedi there, talking to us from Yemen's capital, Sana'a. Let me introduce our guest. We have Aleja Magnier, who's a journalist and political analyst, joining us from Brussels. We also have Michael Springman, former U.S. diplomat in Saudi Arabia, who joins us from Washington, D.C. I'd like to welcome you both. And Aleja, if I may first start with you. This UN report is quite alarming. It should somewhat have been anticipated, but the depth of it maybe is not something that's very well known. And I'll start out with the first part of this report that we have picked out as a highlight, where Yemeni children suffering record rates of acute malnutrition, and this is the part that needs to be highlighted, putting an entire generation at risk. Do you find this surprising and shocking at the same time, given the fact that you're looking at a war that is now into the sixth year?
Well, Yemen was declared the world's largest humanitarian disaster by the United Nations. And it is the UN estimate 80% of the population, that is around 24 million people, requires some form of humanitarian protection assistance, including 14.3 million who are in acute need. So we're talking about two-thirds of all districts in Yemen of the country are already in pre-famine. We're talking also about an impossible situation described by all humanitarian UN organizations that are on the ground, and they describe it as the worst humanitarian crisis in the world, yet we don't have the resources that need to save the people who are suffering and who are continuously dying. And then also there is the COVID pandemic that is spreading. There are 3,500 hospitals and medical facilities in the country, but only half of these facilities are functioning. That means the country population of around 24 million will have no access to adequate health care. Now, the point is, and here is quite an hypocrisy, is I've been in Bosnia during the war, and we see the international community very happy to invest billions of dollars and euros supporting humanitarian support, help to the population, but not to stop the war. So we saw in 2019, the international community spent 2.6 billion in aid operation. In 2020, they spent only 558 million. And in 5 years of conflict, this is going to cost the international community 29 billion. Now, if we add these 29 billion to almost 100 billion spent by the Saudis, and rather than waging war on Yemen, we invest in constructing the country, we will have the richest and the most beautiful country in the world. And that is the hypocrisy. And this is where it is quite shocking to continue accepting war crimes happening every single day by the Saudis, and yet this is our best Western ally.
Oh, well, this takes a rather new turn to the conversation. So let me ask you, if I may, Michael Springman, our guest highlights a very important point when it comes to the finances. You know, when you take a look at the humanitarian help that has come through, even though it hasn't helped as much as it should, and even though it hasn't been enough, and we're going to talk about that shortly, in terms of the ratio, you're looking at Saudi Arabia to spend almost five times as much on the war itself. And this could have, in the meantime, made Yemen one of the most, not one, but a prosperous nation within its own ranks. So why is Saudi Arabia spending the kind of money that it is on this war, do you think?
Well, it's gotten itself into a hole that it can't get out of. It has invested so much time, money, and effort into trying to destroy Yemen that it simply doesn't want to back out of it. It wants to continue on. It wants to save face. It wants to shore up the apparent Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman and his position there, and to show that he's really doing something for Saudi Arabia, when in fact he's not. And I think that behind a lot of this, that's not brought out into the open, is Israel, the apartheid entity. They have uncovered caches of Israeli weapons and ammunition. They found documents saying that the American government wants to work with Israel to control Purim Island near the Bab al-Mandeb to ensure the safety and security of Israel. Israel has in the past repeatedly intervened in Yemen on one side or another. Israel has warships patrolling the waters around Yemen. And Israel is conducts a very good relations or has great friendship with the Southern Transitional Council, which is backed by the United Arab Emirates terrorist group. So that, they are there and nobody dares gainsay the Israelis because they control just about everything that happens internationally these days. They even approved the sale of American weapons to the United Arab Emirates. Not the American Congress, mind you, but Israel.
So what do you think of that, Elijah Magnier, the Israeli role in the war in Yemen? I mean, is there something there that, as our guest indicated, to secure the safety of Israel, which plays a part in this war?
Well, I think Israel is today the ally of Saudi Arabia, the ally of the Emirates, and there is a normalization of the situation between the two countries, and the Saudis are still hesitant to declare it. Therefore, this relationship and the involvement of the Saudis and the Emiratis in the war in Yemen, when the Emiratis themselves say that we are on very high level of cooperation with the Israelis on intelligence and military levels, they are indeed cooperating in Yemen and they are present with the Israelis in Yemen. And it is in the interest of Israel to control Bab al-Mandeb and to control all the maritime way, particularly trying to turn the enemy today in the Middle East from being Israel to being Iran. And they think by countering Iran and countering Yemen that will help them to submit Iran in one way or another. That's why the Israelis are indeed present in multiple stages. They are present in Syria, where the Americans are occupying the northeast and using the American occupation forces facilities to bomb Iraq, as the U.S. ambassador said. They are trying to create havoc in Lebanon on the borders and centralization. So they want to be present in Yemen, as they want to be present along with the Saudis and along with the Emiratis. That definitely.
We need to take a look at the arms sales, Michael Springman, if we can. Now, what is very ironic about this is that you are looking at, for example, this one headline reading, a deadly concoction of arms sales, conflict, and COVID-19, in which you have a catastrophe, humanitarian-wise, that's fueled by Western arms shipments. And according to this one report, is getting much worse. The irony, and I'd like to get your reaction on this, is that most of these arms come first from the U.S., followed by the U.K., France, Spain, Italy, Germany, and Canada. And yet you have some of these countries that are veto-wielding members of the UN who publicly say, hey, let's go for a ceasefire. Please stop this war. But then they're selling arms. So isn't that a double standard somewhat in play?
Certainly it is. These people are morons, and they are some of the countries listed that you just mentioned are some of the most hypocritical countries going. Germany always bleats about how it wants peace, and yet it supports the American wars of aggression in the Middle East. Canada keeps going on and on about how they are neutral, they are a small country, they want to be a force for peace, yet their government is firmly in the grip of the apartheid entity and is oppressing the Palestinians in Canada and doing its best to oppress the Palestinians in Palestine. So I think that hypocritical is probably a mild word to use for it. These are the people that are really responsible for the deaths of the children and the generation that's supposedly trying to grow up in the midst of starvation and disease and so forth. Yet they don't recognize reality and refuse to recognize reality. They prefer to hide behind their mask of, oh, yes, we're trying to help. We're talking about trying to help, and we're saying all kinds of good and wonderful things. But in actual fact, we're not going to take one step towards putting an end to this mess in Yemen, because it would hurt our businessmen and hurt our businesses and hurt our politicians.
I can't help but to ask you about how once Elijah Magnier, the U.S. president, referred to Saudi Arabia as milking the cow when it comes to arms sales. How much of this is what this conflict is all about, especially when you have not only the U.S., but other countries that are selling Saudi Arabia arms, along with the UAE and whatever is left of the coalition?
Well, if we look at arms sales, it should be bound to international law. So any country accused of war crime should not be provided with weapons from the Western countries. And if you look at the Saudi-led coalition and its allies, they are documented responsible for the highest civilian fatalities from direct targeting. Human Rights Watch documented at least 90 unlawful coalition airstrikes on homes, markets, hospitals, schools, and mosques, and other civilian buses. We're talking about wedding, we're talking about the gathering of children. But on the other hand, we see the Americans are saying very clearly, we don't want to lose the Saudi money, and we want to provide them with the weapons they need. So they continue to killing people in Yemen. We know that they are killing honest, innocent people in Yemen, but yet we don't want to give up on the money they are providing. We look at the UK. UK, they say we are examining, and they try to use all these very beautiful English word from the dictionary to soften the way to put Saudis away from being accused of war crime, and just only to provide them with the weapons they need by looking at if there are historical breaches or if there are possible violation or patent. What do they want more than UN documenting all these violations? And all the NGOs on the ground are saying, these are the pictures, these are the documents, and the Saudi-led coalition is really bombing civilians, and you should stop arming them. And instead of financing all these, investing all these billions to wage the war and continue the war, stop the war, stop providing Saudis with weapons, and sit around the table like they've done in Stockholm 2018. And then in Riyadh 2019, we had this good news of releasing 1,018 prisoners, but then everything has stopped, and we're back as business as usual.
Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, Michael Springman, has been named as one of the most dangerous threats to U.S. national security. This goes back years ago. But yet you have, in the year 2019, a report that came out that AP did a special investigation on, saying that Saudi Arabia and the UAE are giving U.S. arms to al-Qaeda-linked groups, and they are fighting with al-Qaeda on the ground in order to beat the Ansar al-Fighters. So we can see how this can actually backfire, but yet the thirst for beating the Ansar al-Fighters, which they have been unsuccessful of doing, is coming at any cost, it appears. Does the U.S. realize what game it's getting itself into, which at this point we don't know if it's still continuing or not?
Well, given the fact that the U.S. has been working with terrorist organizations ever since the beginning of the war against the Soviet Union with the Mujahideen, I think the U.S. does indeed know what's going on, and it does indeed know that it is training and supporting and giving weapons to these people and what they're doing with them. I think it's a pretend war in many instances, as I mentioned to some extent in my book, Thesis for Al-Qaeda. But I think also that the U.S. doesn't really care. It likes to manufacture dangers and conflicts and threats to American existence, even if it comes from half a world away and has nothing at all to do with the United States or the American people. However, its fear is always good. It used to be the Soviet Union that was the source of the fear. Then it was communism in general. Then it was terrorists, and then it was terrorists in particular, and terrorists in specific areas, and so on and so forth. But you can't justify this huge American military arms budget for its war machine. You can't justify the fortunes that are fueling the operation of the Central Intelligence Agency and the other American intelligence services. You can't justify the clampdown on personal liberties in the United States unless you have enemies somewhere. And like the Roman Empire, if there aren't enemies, then the United States will manufacture them either by attacking some country and creating a counterattack, or it will imagine that something is happening and claim that this is really an attack. So it's something that's been running through American politics since the end of the war, 75 years ago.
Okay, thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. That was Michael Springman, former U.S. diplomat in Saudi Arabia. Thank you, Elijah Magnier, journalist and political analyst from Brussels, and Abdul Latif Al-Wasadi, who was our correspondent who spoke to us at the top of the hour. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Vitali, the entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.
Arabi English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to Arabi English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Arabi English Radio. Unity Week. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Welcome to the third part of the special series on Unity Week that spans 12th to 17th of the Islamic month of Rabiul Awwal, marking the birthday anniversary of the Messenger of Mercy, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Hope we will be true followers of him and to meet him in paradise. The Almighty has promised mercy on himself and spread it to the extent that it has engulfed the entire universe. But some people have deviated from the right path and have effectively deprived themselves of this divine mercy. However, the divine messengers try their best to guide mankind and return them back to divine mercy. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, was the most obvious figure amongst these divine messengers and the absolute symbol of divine mercy. The Almighty addressed him in Ayah 107 of Surah Anbiya as, "And we have not sent you but a mercy for the worlds." People, whether believers or disbelievers, enjoy the mercy of the Prophet of Islam. Yet some people benefited from him and were guided to the right path and towards salvation, whilst others stood up against him and fomented hostility towards Islam. The Almighty sent Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, for the salvation of the entire mankind. But some people, from the advent of his mission, didn't want to march in his path. This trend persisted until this day. God Almighty is the main source of guidance for mankind, but his training is manifested through the Prophet. In other words, the Prophet is his means of taking the people to light, guidance, and eternal salvation. The Noble Quran stresses that the Prophet of Islam was very kind and affectionate towards all the people. Ayah 159 of Surah Ali Imran tells the Prophet, "Thus, due to mercy from God, you have become lenient to them. While had you been tough and hard-hearted, they would have surely dispersed from around you." One of the miracles of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, was that his indescribable mercy attracted the people to one another. Ayah 63 of Surah Anfal in the Holy Quran emphasizes that the Prophet could never unite people's hearts without each other if God didn't want this. But since the Almighty wishes, the Prophet succeeded. Ayah 63 of Surah Anfal in the Holy Quran reads, "And he united their hearts. Had you spent all that is on the earth, you could not have united them. Surely he is invincible and wise." Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, sought to establish a civilization on the basis of lofty morals. Even during war with the enemy, he did his best to guide all the disbelievers. He would do his best to invite the enemy to peace. Nevertheless, when there was no choice other than war, and the enemy was adamantly insisting on war,
the prophet would battle with the enemy. In other words, the prophet's decision for military encounter was not out of revenge or grudge. In view of this, when he conquered Mecca, thousands of men, women, and children were expecting him to take revenge. Even one of the commanders of the prophet's army ascended on top of a hill and cried out, "Today is the day of revenge." The messenger of mercy, though, being informed of this call, was very upset. He immediately sent Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, to take the banner from that man and announce that that day was indeed a day of mercy. Then he addressed the Quraysh tribe as the main inhabitants of Mecca. He said, "O group of Quraysh, how will I behave towards you, do you think?" They said, "O messenger of God, we don't expect from you but goodness and good conduct." The prophet then said, "Go, you are free to go, and nobody will disturb you." The holy prophet said this and issued the order of public clemency on Quraysh and the people of Mecca, despite their endless hostility towards him. He was the conqueror and victor, but didn't take the enemy captive, didn't kill anyone, and didn't loot the properties of the people of Mecca. This divine conduct of the holy prophet softened the hardest of hearts. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, would seize every opportunity to invite disbelievers and polytheists to Islam. Even when he took captives from the enemy, he used to guide them and treat them like a loving father. He would release many of the captives due to certain virtues in them. Yet, one of his conditions for releasing them was to teach illiterate Muslims how to read and how to write. Another prominent characteristic of those days in the early days of Islam, was the absence of spirit of brotherhood and friendship. Ethnic and tribal adversity and clashes and superstitious thoughts prevailed everywhere. But with the emergence of Islam and the Prophet's words and deeds, people got together and became brothers and close friends. The teachings of Islam created a balance between material and spiritual needs. This is the very thing that the current ideologies have failed to fulfill. The Irish intellectual and writer George Bernard Shaw predicted nearly 100 years ago that Islam and the thoughts of the Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, would conquer Europe as the ultimate solution for the myriads of problems of the modern man that has been beset by excessive materialism.
Good morning.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.